This is Glow in the Dark Radio. The science fiction podcast with original independent science fiction written and performed by Mike Luoma, with music by Kevin MacLeod, The Vatican Assassin Trilogy, and The Adventures of Alibi Jones by Mike Luoma are available in ebook, trade paperback, and audiobook wherever you find your books online. Get links and details at glowinthedarkradio.com. This is the science fiction podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. I have chapter 22 of Vatican Ambassador, the final chapter of Vatican Ambassador on this week's episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. We will begin Vatican Abdicator next week on our next episode. BC is about to get rescued from his cell. He's being held prisoner on Mars by the Universal Islamic Nation, UIN, after trying to sneak into the UIN facilities to meet with their leader, Al-Salid, as BC and Al-Salid had planned. But it did not go as hoped. Al-Salid didn't seem like the same person who'd agreed to meet with BC. BC wonders what the Eldred did to Al-Salid. BC has also been coming under mental attack, and that might be from one of the ancient enemy, thought out accidentally by the Eldred after a millennia in suspended sleep. We'll catch up with BC in a cell on Mars as we get into Chapter 22 of Vatican Ambassador, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. So yeah, the final chapter of Vatican Ambassador kind of crept up on me. I didn't realize it till I looked. I was like, wait, this is the last chapter? But in all fairness, the first chapter of Vatican Abdicator kind of picks right up. There's not really that much of a gap, so it's not like the story changes all that much, you know? But we haven't done Vatican Abdicator on the podcast for about 5 years. I looked it up, it last ran in 2019. So just under 5 years ago. And before that, it hadn't been on since 2011, 13 years ago. So I figure, you know, let's keep going. Let's go through the trilogy and finish it off with Vatican Abdicator. The story just keeps on going. I mean, it's been about 190 episodes. So yeah, I figure it's okay to bring you an encore presentation. I don't really have any book news, although I do want to thank my patrons for helping to support this podcast and keep things going. Right now, patrons are getting a free audiobook. They're getting the chapters of my nonfiction audiobook, the Ancient Stone Mysteries of New England audiobook. As I produce it, I'm giving the $5 and $10 patrons of Glow in the Dark Radio a chance to listen to that ebook for free as well, because I have a newsletter, an Ancient Stone Mysteries of New England newsletter, and the people that are getting the chapters of the audiobook over there are the ones that are subscribed for $5. So I figured $5 and up on Patreon, kind of equivalent. So it's not really an on-topic audiobook, so I keep saying, yeah, here's another chapter of the off-topic audio. But patrons are getting that because I just want to give my patrons something for supporting this podcast and helping me keep it going all these years. Thank you. We'll get into the final chapter of Vatican Ambassador next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
50 years ago, Mira, humankind's last hope to find new resources, departed the solar system. 7 years into her mission, she disappeared. She has returned. SNR Black, a Sol Federation Marine Corps vessel, is sent to retrieve her from certain destruction in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto. What they find will change humankind forever. From Parsec Award-winning author Paul E. Cooley, Derelict, Marines, Part 1 of the Derelict Saga, combines military sci-fi, space opera, mystery, and suspense to create a journey you won't forget. Podcast available at shadowpublications.com. Paperback and ebook available from amazon.com. Some mysteries shouldn't be solved.
Now here's Chapter 22 of Vatican Ambassador on Glow in the Dark Radio.
A voice calls to BC in his dream. Or is it a dream? BC! BC! A whispered voice calls his name. BC! He stirs, begins to wake up, and tries to sit up. BC! A little louder this time. What? Where are you? BC asks. I recognize that voice. Who is it? Over here, the voice says in a hoarse whisper, coming from over by the cell door. BC gets up and goes over to the door. The door of the holding cell is solid gray. There's no way to see outside. Down here, BC. BC hears the voice call from the foot of the door. He bends over and kneels down at the base of the door. A small metal slot is cut out of the door's base so that food trays can slide through. BC looks through the slot and sees two big brown eyes and a dark face. I know those eyes, but there's no way. BC, you sorry fuck. It's me, Fiza. She whispers as loud as she can. Fiza? Here? How in hell? Fiza? BC answers. No time for questions, BC. I'm getting you out of here. There's a loud click and the door opens. Come on, she says, waving him out of the cell. This can't be real. I must still be asleep, dreaming in the cell. Will you come on? Fiza says, still whispering but urgent. I'm not supposed to be here. Let's move it. She heads back down the row of cells towards the exit. BC follows her out of the cell rows, and then out past four guards slumped over chairs in an outer office. Fiza puts an electronic key back in the hand of one of the slumped over guards. Gas, she tells him, answering his unasked question. They never knew what hit them. I scrambled the secure cams just before I hit them with it. With any luck, it'll look as if you just walked out of the cell on your own and disappeared. She looks around the office, picks up a bundle of cloth from the floor. We've got about 15 minutes. Here, put that on. She hands him the bundle. BC is still trying to digest the situation. He takes the bundle from her, staring at her in a semi-daze. Fiza? How the fuck did she get here? Not dead. Not whoring on Wentworth Station. Not her usual clothing style, either. Fiza is wearing a traditional burqa, covering her from head to toe. All BC can see are her eyes. BC, wake up! Put that thing on, quick! The bundle she handed BC is a burqa like her own. BC throws it on over his tech suit. He looks out the eye slit at Fiza. You're beautiful, she jokes. I'm getting you out of here through the women's section. Follow me. And try to act a little feminine. How, in this thing? BC protests. I don't know, she says. Slouch a little. Come on, hurry up. BC doesn't move. What? She asks him. Is that really you under there, Fiza? She sighs. She lifts off the top of the burqa's veil so BC can see her face. She's darker than BC has ever seen her, and her hair is dyed deep ebony black. Aside from some cosmetic changes so I can blend in better, it's all me, she says. She pulls the veil back on over her head. Satisfied? It's her, all right. Fiza, how... He starts, but she stops him with a wave of her arm. Not now, BC. I don't have the time to explain. Neither do you. We don't have time. The security surveillance cams will only be scrambled for another minute or so. She sets off down the hallway, and BC scrambles to follow behind her. The eye slit of his burqa keeps slipping up on him, blinding him. BC ends up piling into Fiza as she comes to a stop. What are you doing? She asks as she disentangles from him. I can't see, BC protests. The slit's too high or something. She takes his hand and pulls him along. Just hold on to my hand. I'll lead. She pulls him along down the corridor. BC can't see a thing. He tries to keep his balance, tries not to trip or lunge into anything as he careens along behind Fiza. "In here," he hears her say, and she yanks him sideways through a doorway. They stop short. A man with a gruff voice asks Fiza a question in Arabic. Fiza answers him back in Arabic. She elbows BC and whispers, "Bow." BC nods his head, and then nearly falls to the floor as Fiza yanks him down lower.
"Lower,"
she whispers. BC tries to comply. Fiza and the man continue their exchange in Arabic. Fiza's tone of voice is all deprecation and sweetness. The man's gruff voice sounds angry, accusatory. "Hope we're not in trouble." BC can't understand. He stays down, huddling in his darkness until Fiza grabs hold of his arm and raises him up with a yank.
"Come on," she tells him. "We're almost there."
She talks as she pulls him along.
"That was one of Al-Saleed's advisors. He wanted to see you, have a good look at you. I had to tell him you were on the fucking rag, unclean, just so he'd leave us alone," Fiza tells BC. "In his twisted mind, that makes you unclean. He didn't need to see you after I told him that."
"Great," BC says.
"Just great."
Fiza laughs.
"Hey, you don't have to act like it really is your time of the month. Okay, quiet now."
BC hears women's voices as they round another corner. The floor beneath his feet changes from hard plastic to soft carpeting. Fiza stops him and leans in to whisper to him.
"Okay, we've just entered the women's section. No men are allowed in here. We usually take off our veils in here, but we can't have you do that now, can we?"
she asks rhetorically.
"We'll need to move through quickly, as if on an errand, so that we can stay veiled and try to avoid questions. Hold on to my hand and try not to trip. Let's go."
She pulls him along quickly behind her as they cruise through the women's section. He hears a few grumbles as they pass through, mostly from women trying to avoid getting trampled by the two of them. BC hears Fiza toss off what sound like quick pleasantries in Arabic as they fly through the section.
"I wonder what these women would think if they knew the Pope was passing through here in disguise. Man, I cannot see anything. This kind of sucks."
They reach what BC assumes to be another set of pressure doors. Fiza opens them and pulls BC through. The doors close behind him.
"Okay, BC, you can take off the veil," she tells him.
BC lifts the top of the burqa up and off his head. He looks around. They're in a storage area filled with old maintenance robots.
"That was a close call back there. One of Al-Saleed's top men," Fiza tells him. "That's why you had to bow lower. You did okay, though, BC," she says. "You did okay."
"Thanks, I guess," BC says to her. He listens for a second. "I don't hear any alarms yet. Guess we are okay."
"Those prison cell guards won't sound the alarm right away. Not until they have some explanation for how they fell asleep and you disappeared. They'll even send out their own search teams first before they tell the proper authorities. They don't want to be responsible for your escape, so they'll try to recapture you themselves first. It's a whole stupid fucking honor thing. They don't want to lose face," she explains.
She laughs.
"The best part? None of those guards can come into the women's area without authorization. So this is the one place they can't look for you."
Fiza takes her veil off. BC can't help but stare at her newly dark complexion and hair. Fiza notices and smiles.
"Like what you see?" she teases him. "Ooh, I'm getting ogled by the fucking Pope," she laughs.
"More like I can't believe what I see," BC admits.
"Yeah, the dye jobs were really good, first rate. Better than what I could do for myself the last time. I have to look the part,"
she pauses, remembering that BC once doubted her story about hiding out on Mars.
"I was here before, too," she insists. "Now do you fucking believe me, you shit?" she asks, pouting at him.
"What are you doing here?" he asks.
"Saving your sorry ass," she says.
"How?"
"Wentworth needed someone here deep undercover. He pressed me into service, made me an offer I couldn't refuse," she says, her eyes growing distant.
Her attention snaps back to BC.
"Good thing for you, I was here."
"You're working for Wentworth," he asks her, still not sure what to believe.
"Not much choice there, you know that," she says.
"I thought you were..."
He pauses. "I thought you were a sex slave working for Wentworth."
"I thought..." he stammers.
"What the fuck?" Fiza berates him. "Spit it out, BC."
"I thought you were, dead for a while," he says.
"That's part of my cover,"
she tells him, rolling her eyes since she needs to explain her cover to BC.
"Wentworth made it look like I died. That made me an untraceable agent. But come on, he did tell you I was still alive, didn't he? He said he did."
"Sure, he did, in a way," BC admits. "But I didn't necessarily believe him. Plus he also said you were working all drugged up as a sex slave on his station."
"Ha," she says. "Well, that was the alternative he offered me. Motherfucker. Made it hard to refuse, you know. Guess he wanted me so deep undercover he even hid me from you,"
she laughs.
But when he heard you were coming here, he got in touch and asked me to keep an eye on you. Good thing I did, huh?
Al-Salid, he wasn't himself, BC says.
It was like he didn't remember talking with me at all. There's talk of this already in the women's quarters, Faiza tells him. Al-Salid left last week on a mysterious trip. Not long after he returned, a new advisor suddenly just appeared at his side with no explanation. But now this new advisor has Al-Salid's ear, and some say his mind, too. Man, these people are fucking superstitious, BC. You should hear them talk. But you never learned Arabic, did you? Guess I've got that one up on you.
BC is preoccupied, thinking.
How am I going to hide out until my ship comes back? As a woman?
My ship isn't due back for another 6 days, BC tells her. What am I supposed to do, hide in here? How long until there's authorization for them to search here?
It'll probably take them about 2 hours to give up on their own searching before they contact the higher-ups. They'll be in here soon after that, Faiza tells him. Don't worry. Wentworth has a ship coming for you. He sent it when I told him they'd thrown you in a holding cell, Faiza says.
She points to a door in the wall to the right.
There's an airlock just outside the supply room. Wentworth's ship will meet you outside that airlock in about an hour. Hold on a sec.
Faiza looks around the room, moves some half-assembled maintenance bots out of her way, and then drags a black crate out into the open.
There's an emergency evac suit in here, she says, kicking the crate. It doesn't have a lot of O2, just about 15 minutes worth, but that should be enough to get you on the ship. Just don't go out there too early, huh?
She looks around the room.
Where's the clock?
She finds a clock readout on one of the door's control boxes.
Good. Exactly 1 hour from now, by this clock. Duck out through that door, then through the airlock on your left. Once outside the airlock, Wentworth's ship will land and meet you. Get you out of here.
She stops and stares at him.
What?
He asks, finally.
Oh, shit, PC,
she cries. She flings her arms around him and hugs him tight.
I miss you, you stupid shit.
She pulls back a little, looks up at him right in the eyes, and then kisses him quick, fast, and passionate. She pulls away and turns to go. What about you now? BC asks her. Are you going to be okay? She turns back to him.
You know me. I'll be fine, she says.
She throws her burqa back on, up and over her head.
Good luck, BC, she says. I'll see you again. Promise.
She ducks out the double doors they'd come in through and leaves BC standing alone in the storage room.
Faiza, I can't believe she was here. I'm glad she was here. Working for Wentworth. Imagine that. The guy has people everywhere, even though he lied to me.
And let me think, does that make him a bigger or smaller asshole? BC hunkers down, hiding out behind the crate containing the evac suit while he waits out the hour. He keeps waiting for an alarm to sound, or for his head to hurt.
Waiting for the inevitable. Waiting for something to go wrong.
BC tries to think himself invisible to all prying eyes, real and imagined, as he sits among the wreckage of old cleaning robots, watching the minutes click by on the tiny clock readout by the door. The hour passes slowly, but without event.
I'll give her this. Faiza knows her stuff. She's approaching her work here the same way she did her cons, and she was the queen of those. She never did seem to care who she had to sleep with to get what she wanted. I don't know, maybe she did care, but she'd never show it. Maybe I'm just a little bitter. I always wish she cared more, but it just isn't who she is. Hope she's going to be all right.
BC pries open the crate with 10 minutes to spare and unfolds the evac suit. He slips it on and checks the seals, fitting it all into place save for the helmet. It's not an actual helmet, but emergency gear. A simple plastic hood serves as his quasi-helmet. He checks the time.
5 minutes left. Plenty of time.
He slips the clear hood on over his head and adjusts the face plate so he can see out clearly. He cautiously heads out of the storage area through the door in the right wall, looking around for any signs of company as he enters the corridor. It's empty. The airlock is 50 meters down the corridor on the left side. BC strides over to the airlock and cycles it open. BC hears a shout in Arabic. A UIN soldier appears at the corridor's other end, 50 meters away.
Stop!
He shouts in English at BC. The door to the airlock is almost open, but not quite big enough to get through.
Gotta stall for time.
BC turns to the soldier and shrugs his shoulders. He points to his helmet as if he can't hear the man.
Any second now.
The soldier shouts again in Arabic, and then shouts again in English at BC.
Stop!
Can't stop now, sorry.
BC slides through the airlock's opening door. He punches the controls inside the airlock, and the door stops and begins to close. The air begins to purge from the lock.
Pa-shang!
BC hears a bullet ricochet off the atmosphere door as it closes.
He's shooting at me?
Paskishkang!
Another bullet hits the closing door. The door still manages to seal shut. Air hisses out of the airlock.
Shit, my suit!
BC realizes he hasn't zipped down the seal for the suit's hood, nor turned on his air. He gasps for a breath as the last of the air is sucked out of the airlock. The UIN soldier is on the other side of the door, banging to get in. BC can see him, but can't hear him. Sound doesn't carry in a vacuum. BC turns and pushes the panels on the outer door's control panel. It starts to open. BC holds his breath and zips the hood's seal shut. He lets his breath out, but there's still no air to breathe in. The outer door of the airlock opens full onto the surface of Mars, and BC stumbles out onto the dusty Martian sand. His hands scramble across his chest, trying to find the on switch for the emergency oxygen. Black dots begin swimming across his sight, making it hard to see. Is this how I go? Grabbing at my chest for the on switch for my air while I die of suffocation on the surface of Mars, 2 meters away from an airlock? Click. Nope. Not this time. BC sucks in the oxygen as it pours into the suit. He's suddenly lightheaded, almost punchy, as the pure oxygen floods his thirsty lungs. He sees bright lights swimming in the air in front of him. Am I hallucinating? Or is that my ride? Flashes disturb the dusty, dim Martian sky over BC's head. Bright flashes of blue, amber, and red light up the dust clouds and descend from the heavens to land about 80 meters away from BC. Cool, it is my ride. Have to get on board before my buddy back there gets into a suit and out of that airlock. He jogs over the dusty sand towards the lights in his evac suit. It's hard to make out details, but BC has no doubt it's his ship. Wentworth, good as his word. Actually, come to think of it, his word ain't really that good. He could have left me to die out here. Well, it's a gift horse. I ain't gonna look it in the mouth. I'm gonna ride it out of here. A ramp lowers from the bottom of the hovering UTZ ship as BC approaches. As soon as BC climbs up onto the ramp, it begins closing up into the ship. He feels the ship rise up quickly off the Martian surface, feels a jarring lurch as the ramp locks into place. BC stands up and looks around. He's in the ship's cargo bay. The four walls are blank, save for tied down cargo straps along the walls every 2 meters or so, and a hatch in the wall in front of BC. The cargo bay doesn't appear to be pressurized. Never assume that a space is pressurized, right? He tries the hatch. It opens on an airlock. BC climbs into the airlock, closes the hatch, and starts the airlock cycling. He can feel the pressure as the air pours in, pushing in on him through the flimsy evac suit. When the airlock finishes filling with air, BC opens the inside hatch. He climbs through into a small corridor. There's no one around. He unzips his helmet and hears a comm already talking at him. In front of you! Can't you hear me, Campion? The voice says. I can now, he replies. No need to yell. Good, come up to the flight deck, Campion. Just come on ahead through that door in front of you, a voice tells him. BC makes his way down the short corridor, through the door in front of him and onto a small flight deck. He sees the stars outside, sees Mars on a view screen, shrinking rapidly in size. Get ready for transpace, Campion, the pilot tells him. BC slides up into a chair on the flight deck next to the pilot and straps himself in. He realizes he knows the guy. Hey, don't I know you? BC asks him. Hold on, don't talk yet, please. Don't say anything, the man warns BC. I hate being bothered while I do transpace, okay? Gotcha, BC says, shutting up. Was it Tex? Drax? Rex? Drax, I think. Drax pushes something in front of him, and BC feels his stomach flip-flop as the transpace drive kicks in. He feels it again as Drax pulls back on the controls, and they come out of transpace. Not as smooth as the project ships, for sure. We need more integration of resources. Damn, that sounded managerial. I never wanted to be a manager. Now I'm a CEO? And oh yeah, I'm the fucking Pope? It's like I've become the Uber manager. There we go, Campion, the pilot says to him. Sorry to shush you before, but, well, you know. Sure. Is it, Drex? BC asks, extending a hand. Drex? Yeah, you remember. I'm flattered, Campion, the man says with a quick smile. Where are we going? BC asks. Back to the moon, I guess, Drex says. That's really up to you. Mr. Wentworth says that's your decision. He said you might want to go to your home on the moon, said something about you meeting with the scientists there. So I've got us heading to the moon. Is that okay? BC considers his options. The moon probably is the best idea, he agrees. Then we are on course, Drex says, nodding. Could you get me Wentworth on the comm? He asks Drex. Sure thing, the pilot says. Guess you want to thank him, huh? Something like that, BC says. It takes some time for Drex to make the connection.
20 minutes later, Wentworth is on the line.
Ah, BC, how are you?
Faiza? BC asks, first thing out of his mouth.
Ah, yes, Faiza.
Wentworth drawls, extending the sound of her name.
She's become quite the undercover agent, hasn't she? She makes a good-looking Arab woman, don't you think so?
You lied to me, BC accuses him.
I was protecting her and her cover, and a good thing for you that I did.
Do you always have to sound so smug? BC asks.
Smug, Wentworth answers. I'm hurt. I'm merely happy my plans have paid off with your safe return, Campion. That was a foolish mission you just failed on.
I thought it was necessary. Alcelide and I had arranged a secret meeting. We didn't want it blown out of proportion. Had he been himself, this mission would have gone fine. But Alcelide isn't himself, BC explains. You know, you really made me hate you, Wentworth, when I thought you'd drugged her and made her... BC shakes his head.
Spare me your grudging respect, Campion. You can be sure I would have had it done to her had she not accepted the Mars mission. I'm not a nice man, Campion. I've done that and worse to other women and men. Your hate is safe with me, he laughs. It's just business, Campion. It's not personal. But men like you never learn that, do you?
God, I hope I don't, BC says. That excuses everything for him, doesn't it? How long has she been there on Mars?
Almost a year, Wentworth tells him. Ever since she proved more useful than I thought she could be.
More useful? BC asks him.
Her knowledge of Arabic, Wentworth explains. Her past experience on Mars.
BC nods.
So, you know of that as well, Wentworth says.
Then you can see why I decided to send her back there. And again, it was lucky for you that I did.
He presses his point.
What went on down there? What went wrong?
I don't know, for sure, BC tells him. I had proposed this kind of covert meeting between us to Alcelide when we last spoke, before I went out to visit the aliens, the Eldred. But when I showed up, he wasn't himself. I'm not absolutely positive, but I think I know why that is. I can't discuss it now, not even on a secure line. There's more I need to tell you. More to talk about. Just not now.
Campion, I've told you before. You can...
BC cuts him off. Not this time, Wentworth. We're dealing with those who can bust through any security you think you have, he tells him.
Oh,
Wentworth gets it.
The ones you said might have...
He trails off. BC nods.
Any chance, then, of getting you to come here to Wentworth Station before you head to Lunar Prime?
Wentworth asks.
So we can discuss this?
BC considers changing course. Hey, why not? Drex, set course for Wentworth Station, please, BC says. Got it. Drex works the ship's controls. On our way, Padre, Drex informs him.
Padre? Funny. That reminds me of the pilot who took me to Fortune Station, Mr. Longju, I think it was. Poor guy. Adrian Longju. That was it.
So, we'll see you here soon, then, Wentworth asks.
Soon enough.
How big is this thing? Who are these aliens, these Eldred?
Wentworth asks BC. Big, BC says. And I'll tell you more about them when I get there. But if I'm right, a million-year-old intergalactic war is about to flare up right here in our backyard. And there might not be anything we can do to stop it.
Right,
Wentworth says, but he's shaking his head.
I never like to say never, Campion. We can at least try to stop it,
Wentworth says.
And if we can't stop the war, then we can damn well try to win it.
Damn, that sounds optimistic, Wentworth. Not like a reasonable businessman.
If they want to kill me, that makes it bigger than business. That makes it personal,
Wentworth says.
But it does put me in the business of making allies and shoring up my defenses.
That's why I'm coming to see you, BC tells him. We've got to deal with each other on a different level. We're going to need to actually work together, and maybe even trust each other. You with me? BC hears Wentworth sigh over the comm.
We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we do.
Well,
Wentworth says,
guess I'm with you.
That was Chapter 22, the final chapter of Vatican Ambassador on Glow in the Dark Radio. Faiza to the rescue. How about that? And Drex, too. Wentworth was actually helpful. Who knew? And again, even though we're going to be switching books to Vatican Abdicator next episode, things don't really change. We pick things up pretty much right here. Even though they might not seem to pick up here at first. They do pick up here. As you'll see on our next episode. Again, as we wrap up the middle book of the trilogy, I just want to say a big thank you to patrons of Glow in the Dark Radio. You are awesome. Without me really needing to ask, you just help keep the podcast going with your contributions on a monthly basis. That's special and important. So thank you again for doing that. That is all for this week. For this time around, I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.
Glow in the Dark Radio.
This podcast presentation is copyright 2023 by Michael F. Luoma and is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License, CC by NCND 4.0. Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his work at Incompetech.com. Mike's books are available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook wherever you find books online. Get links and more details at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. This has been a presentation of Glow in the Dark Radio.